This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of economy? Then Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards earn their keep and which are just heavy, shiny metal. The quick math for knowing when to pay with points or just swipe away, and planning group trips that won't ruin your budget or your friendships. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode. And this is a fun one for you as I detail my top 10 lowest moments during travel. And before I start, I want to say this clearly, actually, that being able to travel is a huge privilege, I know. And in a world where so many people are dealing with conflict or instability, displacement, passport difficulties, uncertainties, the fact that I get to cross borders, explore new places, and share these experiences is something I never take lightly. So travel isn't a right, it's a privilege, like I said, and I'm always aware of how lucky I am to be doing this, especially given what's happening in so many parts of the world right now. Welcome to the Winging It Travel Podcast, your weekly ticket to the world, dropping every Monday and hosted by me, James Hammond, proudly part of the Voyascape Network. This is a travel podcast that throws out the itinerary and dives straight into the raw, real, and unpredictable essence of global exploration, chasing moments over milestones, those spontaneous encounters, immersive sounds, and unforgettable stories. Whether I'm hiking up volcanoes in Guatemala, or camping under the stars in British Columbia. I've met incredible people, seen breathtaking places, and collected unforgettable stories. I now get to share them with you alongside some of the most diverse and well-traveled guests from around the world. Expect engaging conversations that bring fresh perspectives and inspiring travel tales. There are also raw, reflective solo episodes where I share personal insights, practical tips, and honest stories from the road. This is a podcast for travelers, dreamers, backpackers, and anyone who's ever thought, "What if I just went for it and traveled?" If you're looking for stories to tell, tips to share, and experiences to inspire, then you're in the right place. There's so much travel content coming your way, it might just spark that trip you've been dreaming about for years. You can find Winging It and more fantastic travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com. The link is in the show notes. Let's go and explore the world. So with that in mind, today's episode isn't about criticizing a country or a place or a culture. It's just stories of what's happened on the road, how I dealt with that, and how it nearly made me quit travel, but somehow managed to move on and enjoy the place I'm in. So more about situations that unfolded during travel. These were definitely things I didn't expect or didn't sit right with me. Some of them are reflective, some are uncomfortable. Most are good-natured and good humor as well. And they might cringe some of you listening to this episode, but it's all about having a laugh and a bit of fun too, right? So pretty lighthearted episode on the whole. Definitely overall, I think it's key to detail the things that do go wrong during travel because it's not always sun and rainbows. So let's get stuck into the list. I thought about this carefully and I have 10 for you, which I can remember as being real uncomfortable but funny situations on the whole. Right, let's get stuck into the list. Right, number one is Bodh Gaya in India, which is where the enlightenment tree is for Buddha. And I remember visiting this place and getting the detail from the hostel about how amazing this place is. It's a pilgrimage, it's holy, it's everything that you can imagine. But there was one slight problem for me, as does happen a lot in India, more to come on it later. I've obviously eaten something that has not sat right with me, and I actually shat myself walking around the tree. I could not believe it. You know the time when you just cannot hold it in, or it comes unexpectedly and damn, it's done. I'm like, oh my God, what is going on here? I think I do remember trying to run to the toilets as quick as possible, but I didn't make it in time. And for a very popular tourist destination, I would never expect this being a much more mature traveler now, but I did half expect there to be some Western toilets. No, they were all Asian style toilets, which means they're pretty much drop downs, clean and very well kept, but you're going to have to squat and do your thing. And when you're squatting and you've got diarrhea, that is not a great combo. And in those days, I didn't take precautions. I didn't carry Imodium. I didn't carry any medication. I probably didn't carry water that much. So I felt like this was one and done. But looking back, it could have happened again. So when I threw away some clothing that I had on, tidied myself up, I was praying that it was not going to happen again. But very uncomfortable for trying to see one of India's most historic and important sites. And it's just so annoying that happened, and I nearly made it to the washroom but didn't quite get there. I don't think it actually happened again afterwards, which is rare because nowadays that can happen again and again if I don't take Imodium. So that was a one and done. So that's a nightmare. Low moment. Didn't particularly enjoy that. I guess my friends found it funny who I was traveling with. Unfortunately, that was the first one that didn't go well. Okay, number two, Vanuatu cancelled flight / prison hotel. We had a flight out of Vanuatu, probably going to Australia, I'd imagine, which just randomly got delayed to the next day. This was a night flight, so we're there in the evening, and they said, no, flight cancelled till tomorrow, or rescheduled. Like, okay, well, where do we go? They're like, we don't know, but we're closing the airport. I'm like, closing the airport? Well, where do we go? And they weren't particularly helpful at the airport. Luckily, we had a family who was standing with us who were, I think, flying back to the UK via three places around the world, but with the same airline. I just remember the guy being on the phone, like quite irate, like trying to get some help about what they can do. But this family did live in Vanuatu and they had a Jeep style car. And we sort of got chatting and they're like, oh, where are you going to go? We're like, we don't know. These are the days where I probably didn't have a phone or at least any internet, or maybe I was using the Wi-Fi at the airport, but we somehow knew that just down the road from the airport, there was this hotel that's coming up on Google. No real reviews. We'll try there. They're like, okay, well, we'll give you a lift there. So when they gave us a lift to the hotel, a real nondescript entry, and all I remember seeing is a group of, I think they were Chinese, probably Vanuatu immigrants maybe, I'm not sure, but they were living there, owning this hotel, sitting around a table, drinking and playing cards or something, quite late at night. And we said, oh, do you have a hotel? And they said, yeah, we do. Here's the price, quite cheap. But the lights weren't really working. They're kind of flickering in and out. And the family saw this and they weren't particularly comfortable leaving us. And they said, oh, we'll come back next morning and pick you up to make sure you're right. I kind of thought at the time, well, we could come back with you to your house. That would be fine, sleeping on the couch. I don't really know why that didn't happen. But anyway, they left us a bit worried and we agreed a time next morning. I don't think we had internet because we could have done this easily. So I think we said this time outside the hotel tomorrow morning, can you pick us up? They're like, yeah, we'll do that. We'll meet you there and make sure you're okay. So we had an agreed time next morning. Walked into this hotel. And honestly, if I describe what it's like, you probably think it's something out of a horror movie. The lights, that noise when it flicks in and out, just that electricity not really working. And the toilets were horrendous and nothing was clean. I couldn't see where we were going. It was dark. The board that we slept on, yeah, a board, which was supposed to be a bed, was the hardest mattress I've ever slept on. It was so hot in Vanuatu, no aircon, just a fan, but we were sweating balls. Like we were clothes off, like how on earth did we get cool in this? And ultimately we didn't trust the place. We did not feel safe or comfortable, but we thought, you know what, we'll just have some food that we found next door in a convenience store, stay in our room and just get through to the next morning. And it was a night of sweating, being slightly scared and having to help each other to the washroom because it went through this like corridor around the back way and there's like dripping taps and no showers, by the way. It was such a strange place. And the reason I call it a prison is because it felt like a prison. Like, I'd imagine prisoners get better treatment than that, which was an interesting experience. Anyway, the family turned up next day as they promised on time and they took us to the airport and the flight back was okay. But before that, we told them what it was like and they couldn't believe it. I think they were shocked. I guess the finishing touches on this story is you just don't know what you get yourselves into, do you? When you book a hotel and you're forced into that situation where you can't stay at the airport. Like, where do you go? You can't sleep outside. You have to go somewhere. And that was the closest place to the airport. One of the worst places I've ever stayed at in my life. But we got through it. Funny story in the end. Got the flight and got back to Australia. Prison hotel in Vanuatu. No idea what it's called, but rare shops near the airport, some sort of hotel in there, don't do it. Number three is a combined one and it's down to sickness again. I've got Mount Abu in India and Laos. And on these particular occasions, I was absolutely sick as a dog. I don't mean just feeling a little bit off. I mean properly chundering all over the place. Mount Abu, I think, was 3 days of that. I could not leave the room, couldn't walk, couldn't eat. Barely drunk water, couldn't keep anything down, no idea what I ate to cause this, but I was absolutely sick as a dog for 3 days. Managed to recover with not seeing the doctor really or seeing anyone or any type of medication I can remember. I just remember staying in bed, chilling out and trying not to be sick. It was awful. I think the room did have aircon, which was a
game changer, but I think I forced that because I needed it. But the two guys who are with me, Stuart and Scott, they're brothers, I told them just go out, explore, leave me there because I can't do anything. And the reason I put this one in, a bit like Laos, I had this for a day in Laos where I was horrendous for a day. You just can't do anything. You probably really wish you're back home, if I'm honest. Like, you are that ill. You want a comfortable bed. You want amenities that are close, things you can trust. Like, if you want to nip out and try and get some food. I just didn't trust Indian food after that for a while. I remember eating an ice cream. That's the first thing I had when I could be able to get up and walk. I must have lost a stone, I think, maybe something like that. Yeah, I remember walking in Mount Abu. Really nice place, by the way, in India. It's a bit like a honeymoon place. Lovely area. I just remember having an ice cream. That was the first thing I had. And for Laos, I had a peanut curry, which was not meat. It was vegetarian, actually. So I'm not sure what caused it. I do have PTSD from having peanuts to this day in a curry, especially. I won't have it. Can't do it. So yeah, being sick, proper sick, when traveling is not fun. And I would advise seeing a doctor and try and get as much medical care as possible, because you can't do anything. You just got to wait it out and try and get better. Not fun. Number four, Chitwan National Park in Nepal. This was a tour to go and see rhinos. And we were promised, I'll say again, we were promised to see wildlife like rhinos and other things in the jungle when we walked with this guide. The guide was awesome, by the way. He was scanning the area, making sure we went down the right trails. But ultimately, after all the promises, we saw absolutely nothing apart from tied up elephants in the local area, which is not great. So when we got back to the guest house, which was really nice, by the way, and the owner said, oh, what did you see? And we said, absolutely nothing. He was shocked, surprised. I don't know if that's put on or that's genuine, no refund, but couldn't believe we saw nothing. And that was it. End of the tour. Saw absolutely nothing. I think we saw some rhino poo. That was as close as we got. And that was exhilarating seeing that. Not. Other than that, that was one of the worst tours I think I've ever done in terms of being really excited about seeing some cool things in a jungle in the chastening heat. I mean, my word, that was hot down there in Chitwan National Park. But yeah, just remember seeing nothing. Didn't mind the location, didn't mind the town, trendy coffee, I think we went for late in the day, but ultimately, sort of a fun one that. It's not like the end of the world, not seeing runners. It's not as bad as being sick or whatever, but quite a low moment in Nepal that. Number five is the Mount Fuji hike. We hiked on the last day of the hiking season in Japan in 2018, I'm going to guess. And it was rain all the way up to the last checkpoint / accommodation, which we stayed at. I've never been as soaked as on that trip. Saw absolutely nothing on the way up. And they were cleaning the accommodations for the season. So we had to put our soaked wet clothes in a bin bag and tie it above our bed. So it's dripping on us as we slept in the night. They just didn't care for anyone on that day or that night. They just wanted to get back down the mountain and get home after the season. Maybe fair enough. The way they treated us wasn't very nice. We got up in the morning and it's actually clear sky. We're like, oh, do you know what? This could be a great summit. So we took the 45 minutes up, threw a bit of cloud, got to the top, but the clear sky was only on top of the mountain. So imagine getting to the summit. It's a bit of a slog up. You're walking on volcanic ash pretty much, and it's, you know, step after step, and you're just absolutely knackered, not had a great sleep or an experience the night before. Get to the top, look down, absolutely nothing, just cloud. There's cloud all around the mountain. Didn't see one thing of Japan. All that effort, getting soaked, step after step, low moments going up for nothing, absolutely nothing. We got our photo at the top by the summit. Yeah, that's cool. But all that work and we saw nothing. And the worst thing about it is we had to walk back down into cloud, into the rain to get back down to where we started. Just one of those low moments, but I think we did laugh about it. I think at least we had that. I've actually got here also Mount Kinabalu in Borneo. We did that hike, which was much tougher and people were crying, being sick on the way up. It really was difficult. But yet again, got to the top, cloud, saw nothing. The only saving grace in Mount Kinabalu is on the way down, when we got back to the base camp, it cleared out. So we got to see as far as the eye can see on the way down. So that's not too bad, but the actual summit itself, yeah, same as Mount Fuji, just saw nothing. All these hikes that I've been doing, seeing nothing at the top. Singalila Ridge Trek in India, same thing, 5 days in the sleet, in the snow, in the cold. Every guest house we arrived at, no hot water. Every place we arrived at, no view. Absolutely character building is what I call that. Looking back, quite funny, but at the time, devastating. I mean, how many hikes am I going to do and see nothing? It did get better as the years went on. But those three, roughly around the same time, 2016 to 2018, not a good track record. Just a quick pause in the episode there. If you're enjoying the podcast and getting value from these conversations, one of the biggest ways you can support Winging It is by leaving a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. It generally helps the show reach new listeners and keeps the podcast growing. And it's free and it only takes a few minutes. Alternatively, if you'd like to support the podcast in another way, you can also buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/winginit. It's a simple way to help cover hosting, gear, and the time that goes into creating these episodes. And I seriously appreciate every coffee that I receive. It's only $5. You can also head to winginittravelpodcast.com to book your travel through my affiliate links. That just means that if you book your flights, accommodation, or travel gear through those links, it helps support the podcast at no extra cost to you. And it allows me to keep sharing these stories from the road. And finally, if you know someone who loves travel, storytelling, or meaningful conversations, please share the podcast, whether that's by word of mouth, sending an episode to a friend, or posting it on social media. It really does make a huge difference. Right, let's get back into the episode. Number 6 is the Lao border story. I've told the story so many times, I think. Gonna quickly brush over it, elevate a pitch for a minute. Got to the border, some guy shouting at me, don't know why. Told him to do one, you know, not proud of that, but a bit younger in those days. Marched off to the boats to cross the river into Thailand, got to the Thai border. The Thai border guard said, no, you're not coming into Thailand, you don't have a stamp out of Lao. I said, oh, that's a bit weird. He goes, you don't even have a stamp in Lao. I'm like, oh my God, like what's going on here? He said, you've got the visa, but no stamps. You have to go back. I'm like, oh my God. Wouldn't let me in. Back on the boat, crossed the river, 4 guys waiting for me, 1 guy with a gun, 3 guys that are his mates. So marched me into this back office. The other guys pulled out some guns and pretty scared at this moment. One of my friends stuffed some cash in my pocket so he might need that, US dollars, Thai baht. I was so green behind the ears. I was like, oh, that'd be all right. Don't worry about it. No, it was like 30 minutes of negotiation. They won't budge. They won't do anything. They said, we can be here all day. You're not going to go anywhere. You can't go in Thailand. What are you going to do? Your friends are gone. All that sort of intimidation type stuff. And after 30 minutes of negotiation, I finally had to cave in to pay him some money to put stamps in my passport in and out of Lao, which was a bit devastating. And to finish the story, they said I could pay in US dollars or Thai baht. I did the maths in my head, realized that Thai baht is cheaper by about $7, paid that. And instantly, as soon as I handed the cash over, bam, bam, in the passport, away you go. Brilliant. So that was a negotiation story, a bit scary with guns, on my own, had to really think on my feet and weigh up the game of how much do I push it, how much do I give in, to and fro. And also, I just about got back to the bus to head to Chiang Mai. I was about a minute before they went off, so got lucky with my timing there. Number 7, 30-hour bus rides from Vietnam to Laos. Twice. I've done that bus twice. Hanoi to Luang Prabang. And looking back, I don't know how the hell I got through it. These days, I wouldn't cope with not having access to a toilet for that long. I don't recall them being regular in terms of their stops. It was just on and on and on. And the reason I put it in is when you're about 20 hours in, I mean, my word, you're not even close to finishing. What you're doing, you can't really sleep that well because it's bumpy. Not much space. I've watched The Thick of It series 4 about 5 times over and over. I mean, what am I going to do next? It's just the boredom and the anxiety and just no fun whatsoever getting to Luang Prabang. But there's no options really, unless you're going to fly or get a Jeep potentially. But I still don't know what people would do on that route. Might be the same bus. Not sure. Yeah, obviously on one of those buses, I didn't get the stamp into the country as per story number 6. At the time, didn't know it, obviously, but that was an interesting part of that bus ride, right? But anyway, done that twice. And the first time, I do remember arriving into Luang Prabang about 12:30. They got a curfew in Luang Prabang at the time. It was about, I think it was midnight or 11:30. And some guy just peeked his head around the door and said, come in here quick before he gets arrested. He said, yeah, you can stay here. Got a room. That saved us as well. Otherwise, we're sleeping outside. So overall, wouldn't recommend it. Maybe do it if you're young to sort of the story and the content, but 30-hour bus rides, nah, no more. No more. Number 8, Moon Valley bike ride in the Atacama Desert. I've said this story a few times, but I genuinely think this is one of those times I was close to dying. I think I almost died of dehydration. And as no joke, I was stupid back in those days. We went on the bike ride to Moon Valley from Atacama, San Pedro. Takes about probably 1.5 to 2 hours bicycle ride. Flat, not difficult, but the wind just dries your mouth. And we took no water with us. No water. I think I actually had nothing on me. I just went in to some clothes. I think even Lewis didn't have anything on him who I was biking with. I mean, what are we doing? Mental. Got to Moon Valley, hiked up to the top. So there's hiking and bike riding. And I remember getting to the top, pretty knackered, great views, those like colourful caves where they curve in and out. I mean, amazing stuff. But I remember coming back down there, back to our bikes. So I think we probably locked our bikes up by the guardhouse place. And we're like, crikey, it's an hour and a half to 2 hours back to San Pedro. And I am gasping. We are gasping. And I said, Lewis, I'm going to have to ride as fast as I can because I can't cope with this dry mouth anymore. There's nowhere to buy stuff in those days in 2014. And by the time we got back to the town, we somehow made it back. But I was biking like Lance Armstrong on a Tour de France. And we all know he didn't do that naturally. I mean, I was going that fast. I think I threw the bike down, ran into the first shop. Obviously, I had some money on me and bought two bottles of Coke and smashed them down. Didn't buy any water. Absolutely basic. But I do remember at the time, we were slouched against the house thinking, I think we're close. I think Lewis probably agreed that we were just, what were we thinking? Just take a bag and take some water. Mental. So the dehydration on the last 35 minutes to 45 minutes, I didn't think I could carry on. I just had no energy. Crazy. Close to dying, I think. Not great. Number 9, running out of money in Australia. Yeah, 5 weeks in on the East Coast, which was already planned, cut my trip short because I literally ran out of money. No backup, no savings funds that travelers seem to have when they said they got their money. Oh yeah, I still got a couple of grand in. No, nothing like that. No money. Got to Noosa. Someone gave me a phone number, rang that phone number from a payphone, and they offered me a job on the spot, on the phone, on the Monday. And that was the Thursday or Friday. And I knew I had enough to get down to somewhere for a job. I think I had $100, booked the flight from Brisbane, got a bus to Brisbane, which was already booked, to Melbourne, stayed at someone's house for 2 days. Just looking back, calculated that I've got enough for a week, which is going to be a week in a hostel and food. The place I worked at offered to pay me for the first week early. And that helped because I literally had no money. But that first week, 10 days from Noosa to Melbourne at the end of the first working week, I was hanging on, wasn't eating. Urban Central, where I stayed, had free pasta and free rice and some odd bits here and there. I was just using that. I was just cooking the free pasta, some oil about, some salt. That would have to do. Luckily, there's a project at work, so we got free lunch and they had free fruit. They had free breakfast there, like toast. So I smashed that in. But the story is, I don't know if people do this that often, but when you get to that point where you are on the cusp here of having no options with no money, that is a low moment because you've got no job. You've got no way to make any income. I mean, what do you do in a foreign country, Australia, as far as it can get from the UK? What am I going to do? I mean, God knows what would have happened if I didn't get that job. Dreaded to think. I actually don't know what I would have done. So lucky in the end, but that's where winging it doesn't really help out. But I did wing it a little bit. I mean, I think the moral of the story is talk to people. Just talk to people, get on with them, be nice. They might give you a number for a job. They might help you out somewhere. The person I met on the East Coast in Magnetic Island gave me the number for the place that she used to work at. That got me the job. And the person I stayed with in Melbourne for the first weekend, 3 or 4 days, they are people I met on that bus ride in Laos, actually. Interestingly enough, on that 30-hour bus ride, there's two girls from Newcastle. One of them was living in Melbourne and I slept on their sofa. Bailed me out. Crikey. Low moment, but got through it. And that job was awesome. And I managed to save again for the next trip in South America. But that was a low moment. I think that 10 days between Noosa and Melbourne before I got paid. Whew, crikey. Number 10, giant ants in Oman whilst wild camping. I had a day in Oman where I was fed up with wild camping. And this is on Masirah Island. Oman is amazing. There's no rules. You can wild camp anywhere. Just take your trash with you, of course. And be mindful of the heat. It gets hot. And also the cold in the evening in the desert. It depends on what part of the year you're in, but that gets really cold at night. In this particular part of the year, in May, it was hot. And I was getting a bit hot and bothered. And we're doing some wild camping. It's going okay for me. Emma was a bit of a anxious wreck because it's actually quite weird for us to camp in random places when there's no one about. I don't think we're used to it. And I don't think we're those type of people if it's not controlled. So what I mean by that is if it's a campsite, which we stayed at many a time on a road trip across Canada and US, and there's no one there, that's fine because it's a built up thing. There'll be someone working there and it's maintained. But wild camping is a completely different beast. And on this day, we set up camp on this beach, no one there, coming to sunset, beautiful sea, beautiful scenery. But when we're setting up camp for our tent, there's just these giant ants everywhere. And I could not keep myself together. Cooked the food for the evening. They're just about. So you lost my shit. couldn't cope, had enough, somehow walked off into the distance just to calm myself down, come back. I managed to get through the night and wake up next morning quite relieved. But I think from that moment, which is about a week in, I think we were done with wild camping in Oman. And we're actually going back onto the mainland the next day up to Nizwa, which was 40 degrees. And we're like, no, we can't camp in this. So we stayed at a hostel. But yeah, giant ants in Oman. Felt like they're going to kill me. They're huge. They're going to all bite me at once and I'm going to die. That was the basic premise of that. A low moment on our trip in 2023. I've got a bonus one, which is related to working on a work permit. So if you promise yourself or your friends that you're going traveling after your work permit, like I did, going to South America for 4 months, I went to the vineyards with no real plan, but just to work as much as I can. Problem is, there's no work. I probably had 50 to 60 days of work in 3 months, and they weren't full days, and they weren't paid by the hour. It was real low paid, almost slavery, really. To picking grapes, driving tractors, whatever I was doing. Some of the jobs were okay, like driving the tractor will be paid by the hour, but it's just for one day. I needed consistent work. So I got to the point where I was desperate. Again, met someone at the hostel who gave me a number for Hayes Agency, which is worldwide. And I rang up, said, I've heard a rumor. I said, this person on the phone, this recruiter, I've heard that you guys accept people to do shift work in mines, in kitchens. And they said, yes, we do. They said it's going to cost $500 to get certified, but once you're certified and you're free, we'll call you up and you can go and work. So I weighed up the cost, thought it was worth it, got my qualifications, did some tests, paperwork, et cetera, medical maybe as well. I got my first shift, which was 12-hour shifts in the kitchen in Northwest Australia, 18 days on. Now, I knew I had to do this at least twice to get enough money to go to South America. So it was at the start of this process. And the first few days were real low moments. And I mean proper low moments of working, sweating my ass off, doing this backbreaking work of like mopping up, cleaning, preparing food, washing up, constant washing and cleaning for 12 hours. I remember after the first day thinking, crikey, I've got another 17 days of this, no break. Yeah, the pay is good. I'm going to get paid well at the end. I'll get free food. I'll get free accommodation, free sky. Sounds great. But those 12-hour shifts, they take a week to get used to. And for the first week, I was done. I think the only thing that saved me in that first week before just quitting and going home was that I got talking to the chefs. And I think if I have any advice and you're working in mine science in Australia and you're in the kitchens, get to know your chefs. If they have a beer afterwards, just go and say, can you join them? They'll probably say, yeah, have a beer, be nice. And what that does for you is any grievances like I had, my boss was an absolute nightmare. She was awful, almost a bully, actually. I complained to the chefs about her. And then some other people come forward, said that she's really nasty. And eventually she got moved on to another job on the site. And that was fine after that. But they asked me why and explained why. And you might think I'm sort of telling on the person who was my boss, but she was generally awful. I've never experienced that type of person in the workplace before. She was that grim. But the point being is, if you work with the chefs, be nice to them. They might just give you some jobs that are not as hardcore. So for example, you've got a team of five. You're all doing the big industrial dishwasher, or you're just constantly putting stuff away, prepping the dining room, whatever it is. They might need one person to come and prep food. And let me tell you, prepping food or going to collect food from the storage is much better than cleaning all the time. And that's the jobs I got to do on the first shift I did. So the first 18 days. On the second 18 days, I was asked to do night shifts, way, 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 way better. No management, much more chill, relaxed, much more of a freer atmosphere. Breakfast was chaos, but you knew as soon as you got past breakfast, it was done. So I guess I learned to really get on with people there, be nice, have a laugh, have a beer or two after your shift, which really worked in the end. And actually, I didn't mind it. I think looking back, I would say to anyone on a work permit, if they still do this, that sort of work is brilliant, because you can do 2 weeks on, 1 week off. You save loads of money. And then that week off, you could literally fly to Thailand for a week. You've got so much money to play with, right? It's a good lifestyle. You'll definitely save money to go traveling again. And I don't think it's a long-term game, but for a short-term game and you're young, definitely do that. A lot of the chefs I work with don't do it anymore because it's too hard. I mean, 12-hour shifts for 3 weeks on end. It's difficult. But yeah, that was a low moment. I mean, when I was mopping the floor, I was allowed to have music on. That was a saving grace. And I remember having some Brazilian samba on just to get me in the mood for the World Cup. I try and work towards that moment. I was with my friends in Rio for the World Cup. So I was working towards that. And ultimately, those two shifts. So I think about 35, 36 days of pay bailed me out big time. Right. They are my 10 lowest moments. A mixed bag. Let me know what you think is your favorite one, your worst one, your funniest one. And please send me in your lowest moments whilst traveling, because we all do have them. I think you have them if you put yourself out there and do stuff, do activities, go to interesting places and meet interesting people. I think if you do that, then you're going to have some stories. And that's what it's all about. Thanks for tuning in for Break Up the Bhutan content. And we'll be back with the Bhutan content to wrap up that whole series in the next few weeks. But until then, hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you next time on the Winging It Travel Podcast. And don't forget to like, subscribe on YouTube, and rate 5 stars for the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast app that you use. Or head to buymeacoffee.com/winginit to buy me a coffee for $5. This helps the production costs. And then head to voyescape.com for more amazing travel podcasts. And tell your friends about Winging It and all those podcasts on that site. Cheers. I'll catch you later.
Hi, I'm Mike Siegel, and man, oh man, do I love talking about travel. You think I'd get enough of it, touring the world as a stand-up comedian, or just going off on my own personal adventures around the world? No, when I get home, I still have to talk about it. That's how much I love travel. So every week I sit down with a friend, a travel expert, influencer, expat, or anyone from any walk of life who shares my passion for travel. So if you want to hear a fun, casual, off-the-cuff chat about travel from people who love it, listen to the Travel Tales Podcast with me, Mike Siegel, wherever you get your podcasts.
Quick question. Do you want travel tips from people who have actually been there?
Our show is co-hosted by Tim Johnson, an award-winning travel journalist who's been to more than 145 countries around the world. And I'm David Brody, the other co-host who's been travel podcasting for 20 years while traveling to 50-plus countries around the world.
In about 10 or 20 minutes per show, we break down a destination with the kind of insight you usually only get from long guidebooks or hours of research.
So if you want expert advice, zero fluff, and travel inspiration that you can actually use, search for Travel in 10 wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can also find us at voyescape.com.